Mr. Beagle Reel 5.
That this will be, they said, for a short distance until, because it is, it's war, so it's not easy. You will only be kept, you only travel in these trucks until we get to a passenger train. And you'll be changed over from here to the passenger train. We believe them again. But when we put in, this was just the parents, myself and my sister, in this cattle truck, packed like sardines, and sealed the outside door, in the middle of the floor, was like the bottom of a drone. That was our toilet. We were hungry. If you ask me, did we eat the bread? No. Because we just choked. Nothing, not a word passed between one another. Dark, we had watches, we couldn't see the time. And we traveled and the train stopped and moved forwards and stopped again and forward again and so on. And then eventually, the train came to a full stop. Lift the doors open. And the noise and the shouting and the SS with whips, Alsatian dogs, Schnell, Raus. And before I could say anything, I could see anything. Before I knew where I was or what, I looked around. I was holding my father. Where's my mother and sister? They were pushed to the women's, a line for the women. I haven't seen it. That was it. Never seen them again. And so and then I look to the left, thousands of women on the left with striped dresses, with a striped scarf there. To the right, thousands and thousands of men in striped pajamas with a striped cap. And I'm saying, what sort of place is this? Where am I? And then the Sonderkommando, which I mean, I'm sure you must have heard it come across the Sonderkommando before, the Canada, those who worked on the ramp, started shouting, leave all your rucksacks. You see the four chimneys ahead, which was on the left, 50 meters ahead where the train stopped. The four chimneys, they say, see over there, you're all going in there. Leave everything. And then one shouted out, this is Auschwitz. And that's the first time I heard the word Auschwitz. Yeah. This is Auschwitz. Still didn't mean much. So, the selection of men. And I always had my father in front of me. I just stuck to him, held on to him. And there's the infamous Dr. Mengele. I only found out after it's him. I didn't notice him there at that time. With his little bayonet, left, right, just by accident, or coincidence, whatever, myself and my father pointed right, so went right. Then those who went right led him to a building there, go into the first room, undressed completely, everything left, go to the next room, which found out after was the lousing section. Hair removed from all over the body, men and women that was, slapped on with a big rag, horrible, I still smell it and feel it, horrible strong disinfectant all over the body. And then we go into the next room, and we get our uniforms. These striped pajamas, their cloaks, no underwear, no socks, nothing, the cap. And then led to a barrack, which, as soon as we came in, talked to the others there, so they said, oh, this is the Tsigane Lager, the gypsy camp. But it was also the quarantine camp. And after, because the quarantine camp was for the crematoriums and also for factories in concentration camp, for munition factories in Germany. And I I don't know whether you were aware of it or not. Wherever, say, if they took 1,000 men, which was, I mean, 5,000, 500, 10,000, anything, the Auschwitz authorities were paid per man from the factory. Yes, this was, whatever went down, business was business. And the first night, it was dark, and there you see this colorful, bright orange and red belting out from these chimneys, and then the stench was unbearable. And I said, what is happening here? What's happening? Then we talked to one or two others, said, well, I said, this is whatever, but we'll all finish up there. This is the gas chambers and crematorium. Those were there already for a few days or a week or two. So it's the first time I heard gas chambers and crematorium. So I said, okay, so be it. We're led into a barrack because of the quarantine camp. There were no bunks, just on the concrete floor, like sardines, one next to another, 300 to 400 in a barrack. And then early morning, must be maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, chased everybody out. First they threw in 50 or 100 portions of it, just threw in and fight for it. Because the quarantine, they were not interested, the keepers going. Because we were either going out to work or into the chimneys. So why should they waste food? But it's a bit of fun. Fight for it. Well, as well, I was a goer, I was a fighter. From day one, I didn't want to miss anything. But after the first night in Auschwitz, I was gone. I packed in. I feel I was very, very well learned in the Talmud. My mind went a blank, and I say, the shock on that evening, the first evening in Auschwitz, had an effect on me. And I was more or less forgot most of it. Yeah. Complete blank. So, first morning, my father says, something happened, his right arm. He cannot feel it. I remember pinching it, dead. Whether it's a coincidence or whether it was from the concrete, he was sleeping on his right arm, it happened, who knows. But what can you do? You were not allowed into the barrack during the day. You had to just walk around the grounds. That's why you always seen thousands and thousands of people to the left, women and the right men. Because you were only allowed in for about 3 or 4 hours to sleep in the barrack. And that's it. Otherwise, out. The rain, cold, didn't matter. Out. So, and maybe an hour or two later, assessment comes. Kind of short, stocky fellow, maybe on this right one, his shoulders. And he screams out, is there an Uhrmacher there? Is there a watchmaker here? Uhrmacher is watchmaker. No, tailor, shoemaker, joiner, so these were quite common trade. Watchmakers were already something special. I said to my father, Father, come on, let's put the hands up. He said, if they give me a job to do, I cannot do it. I said, it doesn't matter. After one night, you can see, will never come out from me. Nothing to lose. He won't. I just took his arm and my arm, raised it. You won't believe there's something again, these things happened. He said to me, things that these are clear. This was only to the left, less than 50 meters from the crematoriums. This is the SS kitchen. The SS kitchen. It's just in the yard. It's a side. It's 12 o'clock. It's 12 o'clock. Beide. He says, both. Come into there. Come together. I had a job to get my father to go there. He says, what are you doing? He says, I said, we've got nothing to do, we won't come out from here. I forced him, he went. The fellow there, the one who dished out the food for the SS, knew about us. Oh, sind Sie die Uhrmachers? Are you the watchmakers? I said, then Pader was terrified to him that I said, yeah. Like a good German, perfect. And he gave us a container and put in that soup full of meat and vegetables and potatoes. And I didn't have to have protection to put it from the bottom. The whole thing was solid. And then small French stick each and half a packet of margarine. And he said, more than common to feed it. Again, I had a fight with my father. Come, he's frightened. This went on for 7 weeks.
Were you doing any work?
No.
No watchmaking work?
No. 3 years ago, I was a very, very good friend of mine. It was unfortunately the last time I was in Israel, because I haven't been well since. Somebody was about 4 or 5 years older than me. Isaac Heschenbaum lives in Tel Aviv. We both worked in this leather factory together. Great friends, we're like brothers. And I told him about this incident. Never told him before. He says, he's very, very clever, very down to earth, very clever. He's intellectual. He says to me, Mendel, he says, you see, I always took you for a clever man. Can't you see why he said this? That assessment was a watchmaker. I said, is that you're right? You had some feeling for a fellow watchmaker. Because we're skeletons after 4.5 years, they get. So, again, the impossible happened. So, anyway, the problem is, each time, 500 men, forward, 800, 1,000, 200, twice a day, 300, day after day. And I want to wait to see what my father's arm will go better. I don't want to leave him there. Because I knew if I leave him there, I know exactly what will happen. So each time I did this, so somehow I managed to find a corner not to be seen, because it's a vast place. Have you been to Auschwitz?
No.
You should go.
I've been to Buchenwald, not Auschwitz.
For the fact that there's nothing to see there, when you see hundreds of chimneys standing in the air, and each chimney represents a wooden barrack, because they burned it down. Auschwitz I is intact. It's the air speaks there. You don't have to just to stay there and look. So we managed to somehow keep away from being taken. I both selected for the crematoriums or taken away for the transport. It was exactly at the end of September, which was the first day of our new year. Again, we had no watches, no clocks. We went by the moon, the date, and by the sun, we went the time. We learned it. The first day of our Jewish new year. The camp was already empty, because there was no more Jews anywhere left. The crematoriums, the old crematorium, where when I arrived there in August, day and night, the four crematoriums were burning. I could watch from where I was, from the Zigeunerlager, the quarantine camp, to see lines day and night, all the time, people waiting to go in, but nobody came out. When it was very quiet at night, we could hear screams. And then when the scream died, we were already like more or less joking to each other. They were like taken for granted. Oh, I said, that's it. The screams have died down. They're dead already. They're gone. Within 20 minutes, no screaming. Finished. That's it. And in fact, I became an expert after the first 2 weeks or so. By the color of the smoke and by the stench, I could tell what sort of bodies they burned. Is it reasonably fed bodies or skeletons? A skeleton, the smoke was dark and the stench wasn't much. When the reasonably fed bodies, there's still this orange and red and gray smoke just belting out, and the stench went out like this was unbearable. So I became an expert on it. But by that time, the first day of our year, end of September, it was empty already. You couldn't see many people, and we could see it's coming to the end. And then they came and shouted out, screamed out, they want 50 to 50 men with engineering ability to come forward. My father says, right. He says, he won't come because they just won't keep him with a paralyzed hand. But he insisted. And he insisted many times I should go to a transport because he knew he wouldn't do it, and I refused. This time he says, only 50. They want qualified people. This will be a good job. They will need you and you'll be all right there. And this time I was persuaded. Yeah. And that is my biggest regret until this day. That I allowed myself to be persuaded. Yeah. I mean, it's very abrupt. You can say, well, why? I mean, I would be here. So what? Because if you ask me, if you ask anyone who survived, are you happy to have survived? I said, no. You don't feel guilty for it. I did no different than the next one. I wasn't cleverer, I wasn't brainier, I wasn't fitter or nothing. In fact, before the war, as a youngster, I was a weakling. I was a weakling in the family. So, anyway, they put us in a truck. We traveled, this was an open truck they took us, and we finished up in a place called Gerlitz on the River Nisa, which is now the German-Polish border. And one side is Germany, the River Nisa, and the other side is Poland. A concentration camp, and there were 75% or maybe more Hungarian Jews. Who they brought in June. They came in April, May, June. The Hungarian Jews came to Auschwitz. And it was a place and virtually you were there to work and die. Yeah. The food, the rations, if anything, was even worse than the worst ration in the ghetto. Just about to keep the skeleton together. But then I got a bunk, no straw or anything, with a blanket, living with lice.
Did you have to do engineer's work?
Oh yes. The following day, we were allocated, because every morning, between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning, was a pen, which was local. Right? Well, there were around about 2,000. In the whole camp. It came under the Gross Rosen authority. The first thing what they did with us, I didn't have a number in Auschwitz because I didn't work there. I was only in the quarantine. So only people who worked in the boundaries of Auschwitz, which hundreds of thousands did, the Buna factory, the IG Farben, all have numbers. But they didn't. So the first thing they did when I came there to Gerlitz is I was given a number, which I have to sew it down here,
On the chest.
50716 on the chest and on the back. No, on the chest and here, that's right.
On your leg.
Yeah. Haircut again, I had my hair started to go already, haircut. And shaved out the width of a razor blade. From here all the way down.
A strip from your forehead to the back of your head.
Yeah. Just to make sure in case we try to escape, so this would stop us. We didn't have any mirrors to see each other, we didn't want to allow anything. But when I looked at the other, I could see what I looked like. Yeah, it's the only way I could see what I looked like. Because the following day when we went to the, led to the factory out there, there was a bit of a mirror, so I had a look. But what has happened and what became of. So, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Where my barrack was in where the square was, where the appel we wrote it. Appel in German is appel, local. Count it, make sure they knew what it was. And if one was shot, it was murder. If there was one prisoner shot. Then when they were satisfied, then they gave us again a soup. Again the usual half a liter of hot water, a bit of this kohlrabi, and two slices of bread sometimes, one in the morning. And then we were always in five, we always marched in five. And this, anybody you asked in any county where, always marched in five. I would say it was easy to count probably. Led by SS, where in this case, Ukraine and Hungarian SS, and also some from Lithuania, from the Baltic states. They had like a grey SS uniform to distinguish them from the bluish, from the German uniform. Yeah. And they were swats. They were murderers. Murderers. That's why when I see the Ukrainians here, 75% were in the German army. They were in the Russian army when the Germans attacked them, taken prisoners, changed suit, and that's the 75% of all Ukrainians who came to this country. Were collaborators, were accomplices. I mean, when I hear the Ukrainian languages, it hurts me as much as the German, if not more, because I know what they did. So, and if you're out of line, you got a good dig with the boot of the rifle, a good kick. And I got to that I was allocated to the concentration camp was on one side of the river, and the other side of the river was the ammunition factory. It was called the Wumak Fabrik. And I was allocated to Abteilung department, OPE. A massive place, vast. Couldn't see. There were 10,000 people, no factor. Most of it was underground. Massive place. I went around with trucks. And where I worked, rows of benches. Six men to a bench. I was allocated to a bench. Where I was the only one in the concentration camp with the striped pajamas, with that beautiful haircut, the hairstyle. The rest was a Frenchman, an Italian, a Dutch, everybody from a different country, but they were in labor camps. The Dutch Jewish, they were in the labor camps. And they wore their own clothing. Next to me was a handsome French young man, I was in the 20s, and he looked at me, I looked at him, but not a word, nothing. Then the terrorist, and there was over all these six benches was a German instructor to show us how to do. There were, I mean, very large, two half wheels. We had to put them together and put in must have been at least 100 screws, the shape of like a 50 penny piece, and to tighten the two half wheels together. And when it was finished, only the engineer was allowed to make sure whether it had done the job right or not. And the engineer, a tall, fat swine, he was a murderer. We worked alongside with the Germans there. The Germans were terrified of him. But mostly women, the Germans, were terrified. Went around with a rubber truncheon like that. And anybody, you see, one. So when this job was done, the two wheels together, right, so he came and he put very, very thick soap water right round the whole wheel and put pressure in. And if one screw was slightly, not tight, it would bubble. And what happened immediately, right? Sabotage. And on the loudspeaker, and this in this department, prisoner number so and so, sabotaged, carried out sabotage. We all had to go out in the square, watching being hung. And this could be a Frenchman, an Italian, a German, anybody.
What were you making?
After I found out towards the end, there were parts for the V1s and V2s. So I was involved in building rockets long before the Russian and Americans. Yeah. Only parts for it. Now, after about 4 or 5 days, this Frenchman, he looked at me, felt really sorry for me. I could tell. And then he started to whistle tunes which I recognized, which I sang them, I whistled myself when I was 15, 16, 17 years of age, all the Communist International tunes. I said, listen, what is he trying to do, this fella? Well, I said, what are you trying to do? Haven't you got enough to win a Frenchman as well to be after me? After a day or two, again, because I capitulated, I resigned. From the day I arrived in Auschwitz, I resigned that I will never come out from this. Whatever I will be, what, that's it. I won't survive. Again, I had the attitude, what have I got to lose? I started with him, joined him. Then his face lit up.
Humming the tunes. Whistling the tunes.
Whistling the tune, yes. And his face lit up. He's got a comrade here. Yes, one of them. Obviously, he was a communist. Yeah, this is fine. The following morning, he brings me a jacket potato. Beautiful. And suddenly, you get the food that was worse than in the ghetto than anywhere in the Gerlitz camp.
How did he get the food?
He was in a labor camp. He walked to work. What it was with him, say, from 8 o'clock at night or 6 in the morning, he wasn't allowed to walk out in the street. But he was in the labor camp. All the other five looked reasonably fed. So they brought me this. A few days later, we worked from 6 to 6, 6 in the morning to 6 at night. But 5:30,